to the Gym Podcast. Uncut, unfiltered, unreal.
Welcome everyone to the Gym Podcast. Welcome folks. I'm your host, Jimbo Fisher. Joining me this week, as always, is the one, the only, Randy Darsh.
Hello, everybody. I am excited to once again break down some of these games, talk about the upcoming games, and really, I think what I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this week is one of the questions that we just got. We asked you to ask us a question just to see what we would say, and conference races and some of the tiebreaker rules that I have looked into.
It's getting that time.
We are now getting to that point of the season where you know how it is with these giant super conferences where not everybody plays each other. So you have a bunch of one loss conference teams kind of coming down to the wire in the last two games of the season. Usually it works itself out, but there are legitimate scenarios where maybe there are five one loss teams that have to do this really long tiebreaker. So without further ado,
Randy,
I guess we can go ahead and talk about some of the games first, and that'll kind of lead us into some of these.
May I just discuss the events that transpired on Saturday night in Madison, Wisconsin?
Go ahead.
I mean, folks, like, this is sad, but genuinely, like, you all know me. I've been going to every Wisconsin football game since 2012, right? I've been a season ticket holder forever. I'm always there. This last game against Washington, genuinely, was like a top five football experience for me in person, which I know is sad. Like, I understand if you've seen anything of that game, you know that our punter was the leading passer. Like, it was a very messy game. But here's what it's like, Randy. You'll never experience this, trust me. But Camp Randall was like a third full. It was sleet. It was like 33 degrees and rainy, snowy. It was terrible weather conditions. Against a ranked team, like, we were expected to lose by 20. The fans who stayed, the fans who even showed up to that game, it was like, it was the true fans, like the truest of the true fans, you know what I mean? And like, when the final whistle was blown and the fans started rushing the field, like, dude, it was the most electric, just relief.
Wait, did you rush the field?
I went on the
field. Oh, man, that must have been fun.
It was so much fun, dude. And like, I know we suck. I know the team isn't safe, but like, It was really cool to experience it, because you see this all the time, right? We see like about once a week, every other week, like there's a relatively big upset where like a really bad team beats a ranked team. And you're always like, oh, that's cool for Kansas fans. That's neat for, I don't know, Purdue fans or something, right? Like, to be in that position, dude, it feels better than almost any other win. So again, you'll never experience this, Randy, but like, it was very unique to be in that position.
Does it give you a perhaps feeling of light at the end of the tunnel?
It does.
Like some hope to hang on to?
Because the thing, like, the reason we won is because our defense, they looked good. Like, honestly, like, they looked pretty solid, above average in a lot of ways. It gives me hope, where it's like, if we didn't have a fourth string quarterback, if we had an offensive coordinator who could call more than three plays, like, this team might be good. I'm not saying great, but like, we could be respectable. Right, we could be like a decent 7-5 Big Ten team. And it's like, that is the light at the end of the tunnel.
So I actually did some math here. Fun fact, I wanted to say, I know we scored 38 points in Wisconsin, but I actually wanted to say, I remember talking to you during the Alabama game and saying, your defense actually looks good.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was by far our best, most complete offensive performance. We just picked it apart with Ty Simpson throwing through tight windows, triple coverages, just threading the needle all game.
As he does.
Like, that was legitimately his best performance, so that's why you had 38. Like, it almost took a miracle to put up 38 on you.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those types of situations. But anyway, I did the math, and counting the Alabama game, in seven games, Wisconsin has scored five offensive touchdowns.
Guys,
only two of those were not garbage time late in the fourth quarter of a blowout.
It's so rough. The reason, like, the one touchdown we scored the entire game was because we got the ball on the Washington 5-yard line. They like fumbled the ball. Like, it was that bad, folks. It was that bad, but it just, again, it's just like, if we were even like a below average offense, this team would be okay. Like, that is how historically bad Wisconsin's offense is this year. So
You have a big game coming up this weekend.
We do. We'll get to that.
Certainly discuss that in due time. Some of the other games I just wanted to touch on was Indiana, Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give my thoughts on this first. I see a lot of people clowning on Indiana for this, and it's kind of fun to do. I mean, they're ranked above us. And we want to take them down a peg, right? Yeah. But I have to say, you know how, you know, there's the talk about SEC games, how whenever we play a 3-6, 5-5 team that's close, right, it's because they have talent and they're still dangerous on paper, yada, yada, yada. This is the prime example of that with this Penn State team, actually. Right.
Like they're,
yes, they're 3-6.
But on paper, yeah, on paper, they were preseason number
two.
They
have talent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They have talent. It boils down to talent. It, a bad but talented team can be dangerous on any given Saturday. So I don't want to take anything away from them for this win. I mean, it's bound to happen, right? Yeah. You're bound to have a close game. That toe tap, I don't even know if I'm going to call it a toe drag catch to win the game was actually an amazing catch.
I saw the highlight Saturday.
I want to give him credit for it.
Yeah, it was. I hate that. Like, it's weird seeing Indiana make that kind of play. That's an Alabama, Ohio State.
Exactly, exactly. They didn't win this game through some, like, bully ball, got a lucky turnover at the end. Yeah. They had to drive down the field. They started that game-winning drive with, like, a minute and a half left, getting sacked with no timeouts left. Like, they had to face some adversity and really come back from that. And to do that at Happy Valley against a very talented team, it's... I hate to say it, as much as I want to make fun of Indiana, I have to give them a lot of credit. Like, they are a legitimate contender that could win the whole thing. Could win the whole thing.
It's scary to think about, folks. Well, we'll see how they fare next week. We'll see how they fare next week, folks. other games, Randy, that caught your eye this weekend?
Texas A&M at Missouri. I hate to say it, Jimbo. I'm about to award my elephant in the room.
Yeah.
My elephant in the room is that Texas A&M actually looks pretty legit.
The 8-4 Texas stream is dead. I mean, what's the deal? I didn't watch this one. Missouri, you know, Missouri is Missouri. The final score, 38-17, 17-38. Anyone? They got Fetty Wapped. What makes A&M legit? What makes them look good?
They are a fairly complete team. Their freshman quarterback has really came into his own in the last part of the season, and it has developed through the season. Their defense can be scored on. Granted, they did shut out Missouri in the first half, but they are a decent enough defense when it matters, right?
Right.
But they're a complete team. They have a different attitude than past Texas A&M teams, where they actually believe that they can win these games. They don't see themselves as like Texas light, whatever. They don't have like that kind of same little brother syndrome. They kind of do, like the fan base does, but the team doesn't. The
players don't.
You
can
see with comments.
Yeah.
Right. Mike Elko makes certain comments that are like, the past is the past. We're moving forward, in reference to like battered Aggie syndrome and 8-4.
Yeah.
Texas 8-4.
Yeah.
People like to call them. So I just, they're the elephant in the room for me. I don't know what you thought.
No, I'm kind of feeling the same, because I feel like honestly, the fact that they got over that 8-1 hump, like that feels big. Right. It's like, who knows? The sky's the limit at this point. It'll
and
be fun to see
these games in blowouts.
It'll be fun when they face Alabama in the SEC championship. I'll say that much. one team that got, I think, elephant in the room finally that is exposed for me. We called it, dude. Texas Tech took down, dismantled BYU 29-7. I'm glad it's over. I think BYU, dude, they're done. Like, they have to be. They have to be done by this point.
Right. So I am fairly certain that BYU is done at this point. They still have to play at Cincinnati, and I just don't see them winning.
The momentum's gone.
Granted, they could do what?
The momentum's gone for them, is how I see it, you know.
Right, exactly. They peaked way too early. Texas Tech's last two games are versus UCF and at West Virginia. West Virginia has taken down a couple of, you know, superior opponents, right?
Shouts out to Sex.
So
Steve.
That's Yeah, definitely not a gamey, especially with it being at West Virginia. But I just, yeah, they peaked too early. That happens to some teams. And BYU is known for this, as peaking too early and then just sputtering out. I mean, that's what kind of Texas A&M used to be known for, at least, right?
Yeah.
But I just, they're not, I don't know what it is. They're not good, man.
No, I'm glad we called it, though.
They played legit defense and got completely shut down the whole game.
Yeah, which is crazy to think out of Texas Tech. Because Texas Tech, so, you never think of as a defensive team.
To discuss the Big 12 standings, tied for first, all these teams have one conference loss. It is Texas Tech, BYU, and Cincinnati. Cincinnati and BYU do play each other. Texas Tech finishes with UCF and at West Virginia. So it looks like it's going to be two out of these three teams, most likely. it would have to take a crazy chaos scenario that I'm not going to unravel the yarn from to try to figure out what would happen if there were multiple two loss teams.
Yeah.
Just most likely 99% chance is going to be two out of these three teams at this point.
I guess if it comes down to a rematch, like I don't see BYU winning this. I don't know, man. I think Texas Tech, they made a statement win, and they're to me, like they're the only really legitimate Big 12 team this year. So I'm glad they won.
I think Texas Tech would win a rematch 100%. I don't like, you can only learn so much, learn from so many mistakes before you just realize, okay, we're not going to match up.
Yeah. The only other game that really kind of caught my eye last week, Oregon barely survives on the road 18-16 against Iowa. Oregon to me, dude, like they seem really sus this year. You know, you look back that they barely beat Penn State. You know what I mean? They struggled against us the week prior. Do you think Oregon is kind of a fake team this year? Like they're going to make the playoffs, but like, do they deserve to make the playoffs?
I mean, if they're one loss or two loss, including the conference championship game, which they may not even make at this point, they're probably not going to make at this point.
Yeah.
One loss team. I mean, they still have to play USC and at Washington. And
Washington
Minnesota,
will be easy.
Minnesota,
Washington will be easy. Don't worry.
Well, you never know. Yeah, I don't think they're going to go far in the playoffs. It's kind of hard to say because, like, you know, I gave so much credit to Indiana, but now that 10-point win is almost looking not as good. But then on the other hand, if you remember that 10-point win for Indiana, they threw a pick six in that game and still won by 10 at Austin.
That's pretty tough, yeah.
So, yeah, it's hard to say. Like, you don't know if there's just, like, they're waiting to kick in the second gear come playoff time. Sometimes teams with some longevity do that.
Yeah. I get the sense real quick that like Ohio State can do that. There's something about Ohio State, dude. Like I've been watching them kind of on and off this year, and it's weird because they win games like this 34-10 against Purdue. Like that's a good win, but it's not like it's Purdue. Like you should win by like 50, right? Not 24. But you get a sense when you watch Ohio State and you watch some of these highlights, it's like, okay,
they're holding back.
They're probably actually holding back for Michigan at this point.
Right, no, I get that. And with Oregon, I almost feel like they're not holding back in so much as they just aren't trying. Ohio State, it's like a purposeful, planned thing where they're holding certain players in the playbook back. They know to let certain players get rest. While with Oregon, they just kind of want to throw Dante Moore out there and say, go make it happen. We're better. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, go stat pad for us. Yeah. Aye, aye, aye.
Another game I wanted to actually bring up, I don't actually have anything to say about this game. I just wanted to bring it up. Vanderbilt beat Auburn, and they now have taken back this all-time series lead. So congratulations to Vanderbilt.
Congrats to Vandy. I couldn't believe that Vanderbilt held the lead. I saw that. Like, that's kind of shocking if you think about it.
Right. It is. I mean, Vanderbilt's legitimately good. Like,
historically.
They're not a
historically is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, historically. Yeah, they were very good in the 1930s.
I guess. Yeah, get those. So. Pre-World War II wins.
They're the Minnesota of the SEC, one might say. My question is, do you think Vanderbilt 8-2, they play Kentucky and at Tennessee? If they win out, are they in the playoffs?
You know, here's the thing. For as much as we talk about SEC bias, Vanderbilt has, like, this reputation around them. And it's a bummer, man, because, like, their loss to Texas in hindsight, like, it was at Texas. It was a close loss. I think they should be in. I think Vanderbilt deserves to be in. Will they get in? At this point, I don't think, unless there's a lot of chaos, like in like those top 10, top 12 teams, Vanderbilt has a ways to go, dude. They're currently 16th as of this recording. So they have to jump, what, four teams to make it. I don't think they can do it, man, at this rate.
I kind of see what you're saying, especially with the conference auto bids. I mean, we could see a situation where the ACC champion doesn't get an auto bid because two group of five teams snipe it from them. Like, that's very possible.
I think Louisville will get in before that. But yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
I did want to go ahead and dole out my This Was Their Super Bowl award. Okay. I'm going to assume you're going to give yours to Oregon.
No, dude, I'll just give it to myself. It's for me, dude. This was my Super Bowl,
okay,
man.
Okay.
Come on.
In that case, I will go ahead and give mine to Oregon. I am sure they're happy about going on the road to a tough Big Ten environment and beating Iowa. I'm actually going to give it to them for this reason. Okay. So I noticed that they seem to enjoy taunting
Yes.
Iowa fans more than they enjoy celebrating with their teammates.
This is what
and that's
say.
Something I've never liked seeing in teams. When teams enjoy taunting others more than celebrating with their brothers on the field.
It's the second time they've done this now. If you recall, they did it against Penn State when they barely beat that team in overtime earlier this season, and now against Iowa. It's like...
I act like you've been there before, man. I thought you were supposed to win.
What it is it's this weird West Coast thing. It really is. It's specifically an Oregon thing. I got to say real quick as an aside, this is going to make Oregon fans look even worse, dude. But the Washington fans who came to Camp Randall, and there were a lot of them, if you can believe it, there was a lot of purple in Camp Randall this weekend. Probably the nicest people I've ever seen. Straight up. There was the nicest fan. Like, no taunting, no... like, and heading into the game, it was kind of assumed they'd win. But they were all respectful when they lost. They just kind of, like, were very quiet about it. Like, not weird about it. You know what I mean? With Oregon, total opposite, dude. Like, I see why these schools hate each other. Oregon are, like, clearly the bad guys in this relationship.
No, I definitely see it, too. And I'm not even, like, in the Big Ten, nor was I obviously never in the Pac. But yeah. I can just see it as an outsider looking in objectively. I see it. So I also wanted to bring up some conference race scenarios since we are getting that deep into the season.
Let's go for it.
I've done a little bit of math. Okay, just a little bit, and I've looked up some tiebreaker rules.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with the ACC. Just for reference, there are 5 teams that have one conference loss with 2 games left to play.
Wow.
Georgia Tech, Virginia, Pittsburgh, SMU, Duke. Now, granted, I wanted to point this out. Louisville has 2 losses, by the way. I don't think they're going to get in or have a chance.
Wow.
SMU does not play any of these 4 other teams. They play Louisville and at Cal. However, Pittsburgh and Georgia Tech do play each other. And Virginia and Duke do play each other. Hmm. Based on the tiebreaker rules, their tiebreaker rules are the same as the SEC's. So what that means is whenever you have multiple one-loss teams and you can't just do straight head-to-head, they take into account your conference opponent's winning percentage as the tiebreaker rule.
Okay.
So what this means is SMU has not played 4 of the top 5 ACC teams because they're one of the top 5. So that means their conference opponent's winning percentage is not going to be up to par for a tiebreaker scenario.
Yeah.
So that means it's going to be between Georgia Tech and Pittsburgh, who play each other. They're going to take 1 spot versus either Virginia or Duke.
Wow.
From what I can tell, if things play out without a ton of chaos.
It's curious to think, like you mentioned, that like there's a kind of non-zero chance none of these teams make the playoffs. I can't imagine that happening. Like, I'd like to believe Georgia Tech just wins it all and, you know, slides on in, but that's some good analysis.
So,
right now.
Here's the thing. Georgia Tech being 8-1, you know, they could, I think with Georgia Tech, it comes down to beating Georgia.
Yeah.
No matter what else happens, beat Georgia and you're in.
Yeah.
But we very much see a scenario where Georgia Tech loses the ACC championship game to Duke and the ACC champion does not get in as an auto bid.
Oh, especially if Georgia
Tech is currently 5-4.
If Georgia Tech loses it to Georgia and then proceeds to lose to Duke, because Duke's not getting in, right? Like, that's not going to happen. That's wild to think about. But yeah, like, that is the kind of pathway. And like, you sort of think about it, like, I don't think Georgia Tech's going to beat Georgia just because Georgia has divine intervention on their side, it seems. Like, seriously, like, Georgia Tech, if there was ever a year to beat Georgia, it'd be this year, right? But like, it's not going to happen. And so it kind of comes down to that ACC championship. If like Duke can take down Georgia Tech, then yeah, I think the ACC might be out, dude.
I think Georgia Tech would have an outside shot as an at-large if they were to only lose to Georgia.
10-3?
Even the ACC championship, like they're not, the way the committee seems to be doing it is to pretend like the conference championship game wasn't even played if you lost it.
But
they're
like,
not going to punish you for it. But they will reward you for it, but not punish you for it.
The fact that they dropped to 17, though, you know, they're currently 17 as of this recording. That's going to be tough with a loss to Georgia. So, I don't know,
that
man.
That would be very tough.
That's wild.
I think part of it is they've had a very weak schedule.
Yeah,
so
sure.
If they can, like, have, like, a 1 or 3 point loss to Georgia, that might actually help them, like, weirdly enough.
Like, oh, proof they can, like, compete with the big boys sort of thing?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Oh, maybe.
Another conference race I was going to bring up very quickly is the SEC. This one is probably actually the most straightforward.
Yeah.
There's two teams that are still undefeated in conference.
And they're going to face each other. They're going to face each other, Randy. Come on.
I mean, in the SEC championship game, potentially. So let me see. Texas A&M does still have to play Texas. And they play South Carolina, which is, as we know, a dangerous game.
No. That's a layup.
But even without a lot, I did the tiebreaker rules. So Georgia, Ole Miss, Texas are all one-loss teams. If Texas was to lose a singular conference game and all these other teams remain one loss, not playing each other the rest of the way. Actually, let me double check real quick. I want to make sure.
Please.
Georgia does play Texas this week. Regardless, that doesn't make that much of a difference in what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Based on the tiebreaker rules, if everybody hypothetically was one loss, Alabama is number one, Georgia number two, and then I believe Ole Miss number three. So that's where we're at. So it looks like no matter what, Alabama is probably in the SEC championship game. Granted, we don't lose to both Oklahoma and Auburn. Certainly
you're
possible.
Fine. You're fine, man. It's not. Come on.
I mean, I'm sure we can beat one of them. You know what I mean? Like,
it's interesting to think because, like, I guess for me, the only like kind of tangible scenario here that makes things interesting is if Texas A&M loses to Texas, because I could see that happening. I'd assume, does that put Georgia in the position? Like, it comes down to this.
It would be Alabama versus Georgia.
Yeah. Interesting. Which that'd be, I mean, that's classic. That's like, you know, that happens every year pretty much in the SEC championship.
Right.
So in a weird way, I hate to say it, Randy. I hate to say it. I'm kind of rooting for A&M just to mix it up. You know, I think the people are tired of, and no offense, but we really are tired of Bama versus Georgia every year. It'd be kind of cool to get some fresh blood, even if it's just one half of the equation in this championship game.
I think it'd be cool to see Ole Miss in it.
Oh, for sure, too. But who do they play? What does Ole Miss have to do? Because winning out isn't enough. They play Florida and Mississippi State, so they need a little bit.
They play Florida, Mississippi State.
Yeah.
They would need Texas. I think they have the tiebreaker over Texas, but they don't have it over Georgia.
So they need Georgia.
They don't have it over A&M. I mean, it's going to take chaos for them to make it in.
Not a lot of time left for this, so.
Not a lot of, but they're probably going to at least be in the playoff as an at-large.
Oh, yeah, and they should. I mean, and I think Florida, they should be.
Florida and Mississippi State can be dangerous games. Just take care of business. That's all you got to do.
I don't think this is a hot take. In my mind, Ole Miss is a top three SEC team. Like they're.
It's not a hot take. I agree with you.
I think they're better than Georgia. They're better than Texas. I mean, I know there's head-to-heads, but like if they played again today, I really think Ole Miss would win. So, I'd like to see them in the playoffs. I'd like to see what Lane can do. In January.
Me too. That'd be so interesting. Moving on to the Big Ten conference race. Obviously, there's two undefeated teams in conference left. Mm-hmm. Indiana, Ohio State. They don't play each other in the regular season. There's a couple one-loss teams. There's USC, Oregon, and Michigan.
Hold up.
Yeah, Michigan has one loss in the Big Ten, very quietly 7-2. Michigan is like the Texas of the Big Ten this year.
They really are. Funny. It's kind of funny, yeah.
Very quietly, one lost team in conference. So USC still has to play Iowa and at Oregon. You know, I feel like that's probably going to take care of itself.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. Yeah.
Oregon and Michigan sitting there with one loss. I mean, Michigan could take down Ohio State.
That's kind of the thing. It's like Michigan, because they play, so the rest of Michigan's schedule, at Northwestern, at Maryland, two slam dunks, very easy wins. And then against Ohio State. Now, we all know Michigan is sus this year, obviously. But, like, that kind of doesn't matter, it seems, historically, the past 3-4 years. Like, they're going to beat Ohio State, probably. It's at home, by the way, at the Big House. So, like, if Michigan wins out and Ohio State loses, I think mathematically, dude, they're probably going to be there. Like, I think they win the tiebreaker, right? They have the head-to-head at that point against Ohio State. We might be looking
Oregon.
At Michigan. Yeah.
If I'm assuming the Big Ten's tiebreaker rules are like every other conference I've looked into, I'm not 100% verified. I'm sure somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. Based on the tiebreaker rules of your conference opponents' winning percentage, it would be Oregon as a tiebreaker winner because they just straight up played better opponents, like record-wise, Iowa, Indiana, Minnesota, USC, Washington. Like, these aren't the best teams. Even Northwestern has some wins.
Yeah.
It's a much better conference schedule than Michigan, who's played, no offense, Wisconsin. Michigan, I'm saying Wisconsin, Michigan State, Purdue, Maryland. Yeah they play Ohio State, but I mean, come on. Nebraska, like they don't have They're not playing the top of the Big Ten. They're not racking up this conference opponent winning percentage the same way.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Like, these super conferences, for as much as they kind of suck in a lot of ways, being, you know, geographically inconsistent and all that jazz, it has led to these very interesting conference championship races. Like, it's never been this competitive, like, this late in the season at this point. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Very fun.
I'm going to talk about the American Athletic Conference.
Okay,
one very more. Briefly. I'm going to be honest. I have not done any math in the tiebreaker rules for this one, but I'm just going to point out there are five one-loss conference teams. East Carolina, North Texas, Tulane, South Florida, Navy. Here's the thing is that all of these teams except North Texas are two losses or more. North Texas has one loss. But what we saw on the AP poll is James Madison actually sniped the spot as the top-rated group of five, group of 16 in the AP poll.
Interesting.
So it very much looks like it's James Madison's spot to lose if they continue to win. The American did a good job cannibalizing itself for this moment.
Whereas James Madison plays in the Fun Belt, which is a little bit easier of competition, but they are taking care of business. So,
but again, this opens up that scenario where Duke plays Virginia. Virginia has kind of faltered, and they're honestly probably the worst of the ACC quote-unquote contenders at this point. But James Madison had a two-touchdown loss at Louisville very early season. They do play Washington State. They're 8-1 overall right now. If they win out, I think they do get the group of six spots. And what I was saying again with Duke, you know, we could see a situation where they're pretty much guaranteed if Duke wins the ACC, because I think they're probably actually one of the favorite to make the ACC championship game at this point.
Well, that's like
in my mind
obscene because they're not even ranked right now.
I know they're 5-4.
yeah. I mean, like, come on. But mathematics, man. I guess anything can happen.
All right, so for our next segment, we're going to answer some of the questions that we asked you to ask us from Rhett. How do you think the increased investment and backing of Fickell will pay off for the Badgers? Are you increasing investment?
Like, so they claim. I think it's to try to appease the fans. So, like, here's the thing. It's true. Wisconsin does need to invest more, but most programs need to invest more. I don't think it's going to actually help out Fickell all that much. I still think, honestly, like, if we're being real, he's going to get fired next year. They're probably just, like, saving off one more season to kind of, you know, lower the buyout and look for potential head coach replacements, do some scouting this offseason. You know what I mean? But I will say real quick, we actually have invested quite a bit of money recently into new facilities for the first time in ever. We're building
How recently are we talking, by the way?
What'd you say?
How recent are we talking?
Like,
about
right it? Now, it's being built right outside Camp Randall. We've got a new
okay.
for the first. So this is just comedic and probably explains some of our problems. If I'm being real, we've never had a full length indoor football field facility until now. We're building a new one. It's a $300 million project, which is an ungodly amount of money, but was probably needed. So, like, the money's coming in for sure, but with all these things, it's going to take time. Right. It doesn't matter if we pour another couple, you know, $10 million here and there into even like NIL and stuff. Like, that's not going to solve the Fickell problem. It's not going to save the Badgers overnight. It's an investment. It's a long term thing. Hopefully 5-10 years from now, we'll be in a better position because we have better facilities.
OK, I think that's a great point. It looks like from what I'm seeing, there is specific investment in the roster.
Yeah.
That I think could pay off. It could get you to be respectable next year. If you have a respectable year, then you can build on something with Fickell. I mean, he clearly knows how to build this defense, right?
Yeah. But not an offense. We need a new OC. That's where the money should go. Like, let's get a good offensive coordinator and, like, figure it
exactly.
out.
Exactly. And pay some offensive players. Just bring them in.
Yeah, just do it.
From Saxo Steve, shout out. What's your ideal 12-game schedule? I actually already have a perfect answer in mind.
Okay.
So I'll be honest, I really do not like these super conferences. My ideal 12-game schedule would be every conference has 10 members. You play everybody in your conference once, two Power 4 matchups, and then one either Group of 6 or FCS matchup as your little cupcake tune-up game.
Yeah. I mean, if we ever have the Super League thing, and they can finally kind of, like, sort out these conferences. Like, it would be just convenient if, like, everyone had a 10-team conference. That's how it used to be, right? Like, basically back in the day. You know, we didn't have these 20-team conferences or whatever, and so it was a lot easier. You didn't have these weird tiebreaker scenarios. I think the biggest thing for me in keeping, like, really any good 12-game conference is, like you said, regionality. I want to play teams near me that I can travel to and they can travel to us. I don't want, like, it really is kind of lame that Washington played Wisconsin in the Big Ten team this year. Like, as cool as it was to beat them, that concept shouldn't happen. So, like, me, that should be the priority, is, like, keeping the regionality within the sport.
No, I 100% agree. That's one thing I was appreciative of in getting Texas and Oklahoma, is that they at least kind of, it's at least defensible regionally. Like, they're far, like, it's what,
they're not east, but they are south.
Right?
Yeah,
it's east enough. It's middle of the country. Oh, south, man. Middle.
Yeah, but bring back regionality. Like, it's just way more interesting. It's way more fun.
And I like that about our little pod system we have in the SEC now, where you have three permanent rivals and they're all typically the closest team to you. So that kind of creates it for us a little bit. I like what the SEC is doing in terms of trying to keep that spirit alive in the conference. I don't like what the Big Ten has done with grabbing these West Coast teams. Like, it's just not a fit culturally. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
I hire Larry Scott, you know, I don't know. It's I don't know how to solve at this point, other than nuking it all, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, honestly.
So I think this actually ties into the next question, which is from Pumpkin Pisifer. This is Boosifer. I'm trying to remember his original name. I know who it is.
Shouts out.
I know who it is. What will the end game of NIL, super conferences, and TV contracts look like for college football? I think we're going to end up reverse engineering the exact same situation we had, like, in the earlier days of the sport, where you had, like, these giant conferences and they split off into smaller conferences because they realized how stupid it was to have giant conferences. Even with, like, TV contracts and all this other stuff, like, you're going to see it happen again.
Yeah. Dude, it's so weird. Like, and now with this TV stuff going on still with YouTube TV and Disney and ESPN and Fox, like, I'd like a world where it almost had just, like, a model like professional sports, where there's just a league and we can have divisions. We can find a way to, like, make the Big Ten and SEC and ACC still exist, right? Like, in name only, perhaps, right, but still in terms of regionality. But my dream would be, we have our 60 or so power teams, let's say, okay? And they're split up into pods of 10. You know, you got your regional 10 here, there, and there. And ESPN, ABC, Fox, NBC, CBS, like, all, you know, all of these networks just get some piece of the pie. And we're done with these insane, you know, the SEC is tied to ABC and the Big Ten's tied to Fox. Like, I'd like that, because to me, that's the most frustrating part about all this. You turn on Fox, they're only talking Big Ten. You turn on ESPN, they're only talking SEC. It's bad for the sport, I think, to have, like, this much of a divide in terms of, like, not just, like, the conferences, but the media that covers the conferences.
Right, and we're seeing that especially with ESPN, owned by Disney, where they are clearly trying to push out their competitors because they're trying to create their own streaming service, and their only real competitor is YouTube TV.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they bought out, did they buy Fubo and Hulu? Is that right?
Something like that, yeah. It's all these corporate, conglomerations.
All this corporate fighting. So, like, we're answering, I guess, the question of what would we like to see.
Yeah.
What do you think will actually happen, though?
Oh, God. Dude, I think this split we're seeing right now between Disney and YouTube, I don't think it's going away, dude, at least not in the short term. Like, I don't think this is going to be solved this season, and we're going to just see this kind of divide between not just the conferences, but the networks attached to the conferences only grow, dude. Like, we're going to enter a world, I think, eventually, where it's like, pick your package, dude. Or do you want to watch the SEC games, or do you want to watch the Big Ten games? Like, that's going to be your choice. And I hate that, but I honestly think we're heading that direction.
No, that is not, I hate that so much.
It's
dude.
What it, like, it's where we're at now. I mean, I don't know.
Like, that's the beauty of college football, is, like, both the regionality and the ability to check in on the other
any game,
to see how they're,
unlike the NFL.
Going.
That's my problem with the NFL, dude. You have to pay, like, $500 a year or something to watch every game. I hate that, dude.
Right.
I wish I could just watch every game. Like, you end up getting, like, the Browns versus, I don't know, the Jets. It's like, that sucks. I'd rather watch.
Dude, it's terrible in Alabama because they keep wanting to show us Falcons games and nobody here cares about the Falcons.
Yeah, like, just let us watch the games, man. Like, to take it away from us after all these years of having everything, it sucks. But I don't think the networks realize like how much people hate this stuff, or at least are willing to like. People are going to put up with it. Like, that's the sad reality. It kind of depends on how people respond. Dog, I canceled my YouTube TV today. I did.
Really?
I don't need that's it. Like, true. I'm going to keep up with the games, but like, I'll watch like the highlights afterwards, right? I'll like keep up and watch the radio broadcast or something, right? But like, I'm not going to pay for the service where I get like, I was watching the CW this weekend, dude. I watched Oregon State play the Bearcats of where Phil Longo's team. I watched it because there was nothing else on. Like, I couldn't watch Alabama play LSU. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I don't know, man. It's not in a good spot right now.
I think it's going to really depend on what Disney and ESPN do. I think their ball is kind of in their court for what they want to do. You know, I push back against a lot of anti-SEC
yes.
narratives. But, I mean, ESPN is really not great for the sport.
They've been bad for, I think, all of sports, like, to be honest. Yeah.
Let's just face it. They chose the SEC to kind of push this because they know our fans are very, like, this is our number one sport, right?
Yeah.
We don't have the NFL to fall back on. We don't have anything else to fall back on. We don't really have professional sports to fall back on. This is our number one. So we're going to naturally go through more hoops to try to tune in.
Yeah. But even then, dude, I'm going to miss channel surfing. Like, if it actually comes to that where everyone puts up with it and has two different services for, like, one half of the games and the other half on the other, it's going to suck switching between apps to, like, change channels. Come on.
Like, people don't want to do that. People fundamentally... Like, I don't know what Disney and ESPN's end game is. I don't know what their end game is. If they're trying to create their own streaming services with their own rights to some of these games, like, they're going to be able to get Fox, whatever, on their own streaming service.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe, and they're trying to get people to their ESPN app and get people to buy it. And then people will already they'll have enough of a customer base to build off of, so then they can then buy some rights to show Fox games and this and that. Then maybe they'll strike a deal with YouTube TV. That would be the good ending,
I guess.
It's like, we'll pay more. Have your streaming service.
We'll pay more in the end. I'm sure that much. The customers will lose.
Of course. All right,
let's keep it going.
from DK, would you be happy if Luke Fickell got fired after the season, but then becomes the defensive coordinator of the Green Bay Crappers?
So I know this is like he's trolling me, but I would be happy if Luke Fickell was fired. I think Fickell has no chance. If I'm being serious, like, where does Fickell go from here, I think, is a more interesting question. I think that after he's fired, like, he could return to the G5. I don't see him in a coordinator role after all these years as a head coach, but, you know, some guys like that. I think for him and his ego, I think he ends up returning somewhere probably in like the AAC and trying again. Whether or not he succeeds, who knows, but I think that's the long-term trajectory for him.
And you never know. I mean, like, think about it like this. If Luke Fickell has a 7-5, 8-4 season next year, do you fire him?
No, hell no. Oh, my God.
Exactly. So, like, what's the end game at that point?
If he can get together, we'll rally around him, man. Like, I really do believe it's not like he's irredeemable. It's that even after last week, it's hard to imagine. Like, it just feels like...
Yeah, that's true.
It feels insurmountable, but I'd love to be proven wrong, you know?
All right. So from Banana Joe, Mateer's greatest strength pre-injury was his mobility. Do you think after the bye week that'll come back and Bama will have to play with the spy all game? And can it all be effective against Oklahoma's line? Or is this a pass first Oklahoma?
Randy, what do you think?
I have no idea what's going to happen. Every game that we play seems like it's just like a one-score game, right? And I do worry that with the bye week for him to rest, that he can extend drives and finally bite us in the butt for some of the mistakes we've made.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Bama, it seems like their one kind of struggle on defense is against mobile quarterbacks. So, like, I kind of understand why a Bama fan might pretend to be scared. But if we're being real, man, I think even John Mateer in his prime wouldn't be like a guaranteed threat against this defense. And he's coming off injury, like Banana Joe mentioned. I don't think he's going to be 100%. So
even with the bye week, he's probably not going to be 100%.
So I don't think
he's going to try to get out there and play.
Yeah. He'll try hard, man, for sure. But like, I'd be shocked if Oklahoma keeps us close.
I could see us looking ahead to the Iron Bowl. I know that's crazy to say given how bad Auburn is, but I know, everybody knows what happens at Jordan-Hare in the Iron Bowl. So we legitimately might be looking past this game.
Interesting.
From Chipped, Thoughts from Randy and Jimbo of moving from the Rose Bowl to SoFi. For those that don't know, UCLA is finalizing a deal to move from the playing in the Rose Bowl to playing in SoFi Stadium. I'll be honest, I kind of actually get it because UCLA's campus is an hour away from the Rose Bowl. Like, I get it. Super historic. Yada yada yada.
You can't.
I would get it way more if they actually built an on-campus stadium.
Yeah, you can't see me right now, but I'm shaking my head. I'm shaking my head. Because the Rose Bowl has been through the ringer between the college football playoff expanding and now this. My fear, dude, is that the Rose Bowl, if this happens, how are they going to make money? How are they going to, like, generate enough revenue to keep the place afloat? Like, I legit think the Rose Bowl might be abandoned in the same way a lot of historic stadiums are over time. You know, like, we don't play the Cotton Bowl and the original Cotton Bowl anymore, or the Orange Bowl and the original Orange Bowl anymore. It'll be a matter of time before the Rose Bowl isn't played in the Rose Bowl. And I think that's a tragedy because it is a gem of a stadium. I know it's old. I know it's decrepit. I know it's an hour and a half away from UCLA. But, like, there are some things, man, for a sport that cherishes traditions, cherishes its history like this. If there's one thing to keep, if there's one stadium to hold true and dear, it's the Rose Bowl. We can't let it slip away. And I think this is one step in that direction.
I hate that I agree. I would hate so much for the Rose Bowl game to be played at SoFi.
And
so I think SoFi's an ugly stadium, first of all.
Yeah.
Second of all, man, I think we should just have the national championship game be played at the Rose Bowl.
Yes.
I used to be against that, but now I'm kind of more on board because it's the marquee. It's our Super Bowl, right?
Literally.
College football Super Bowl. I probably shouldn't call it that given the direction of the sport. But you understand where I'm coming from.
If like I was commissioner and we were in charge of the Super League and we could do anything we wanted, yes, I would make the national championship the Rose Bowl. Just do it. It's such a cool stadium, dude. And I know I'm biased being the Big Ten guy and like having been there, but like I've been to a lot of historic fields. I've been to Lambeau. I've been to Jerry World. Nothing was cooler than the Rose Bowl. That was the coolest stadium I've ever been in.
It's historic for us too, but given the conference tie-ins to the the BCS bowls, we kind of lost that historic.
Well, it's lost because the Cotton Bowl isn't played in the Cotton Bowl, dude. Like that's the thing. It's like all.
The Rose Bowl is literally in our fight song, so like it definitely has a lot of impact.
I get that.
Like we want to keep it.
We got to save.
Let's go ahead and we got to quickly move on to next week's games. We've had a very long episode, but we do.
Let's talk about Rand. What do we got?
We'll do rapid fire.
Rapid fire, boys.
Friday night, Minnesota 6-3 at Oregon 8-1. Does Oregon finally get exposed by a 6-3 Big Ten team?
At home? Absolutely not. At home at night? Absolutely not. Dude, it's going to be like midnight by the time this game's done. And I'm telling you now, as a man in Central Time, you are too. Those Minnesota boys are going to be tired. So yeah, Oregon wins this one.
We have 11 a.m. on Saturday morning, 3-6 Wisconsin at 10-0 Indiana. Can it happen?
Lock of the week.
Can it happen?
Lock of the week. We keep it within 20. Quote me.
All right. I'll be honest. I think Indiana comes out on top of this. I get it.
They're the number two team. I get it.
I wonder if they're kind of phoning in the rest of the season, kind of to prepare for Ohio State at this point.
They play us in Purdue. Like this is the easiest like layup they could ever have to close out the season. So like on one hand,
that's exactly what could bite them.
If they're smart, though, they're going for style points right now because they want that number one spot. But who knows?
I just wanted to touch on this in the morning, 11 a.m. Michigan, 7-2, 5-1 in the Big Ten, very much alive, at 5-4 Northwestern, having a quietly decent season.
Yep.
Could this be a trap game for Michigan?
No, and here's why.
It's at Wrigley Field.
Here's why. I was going to say, it's because it's at Wrigley Field. If I can make a second lock of the week, there will be more Michigan fans at this game. The Northwestern fans. It's a home game for Michigan. They're going to win this one.
Okay, fair enough. We have at 2:30, 7-2 Oklahoma at 8-1 Alabama. I want to hear what you think about this.
I'm serious, dude. Like, I've been saying all year Oklahoma's fraudulent. I've been saying all year Alabama's legit. Alabama's currently, as of this recording, only favored by 6.5 points. Triple that, maybe? I know DeBoer likes to blue ball haters like me with these like kind of close wins, but like, no, straight up, this is going to be this is at Alabama. Like, you're going to win this one handily. Do not worry, Randy.
I think being a home game is the reason that I'm not extremely worried, but anything could happen. And there's the revenge factor as well.
I don't know, man.
We have something to prove. And what really also worries me is the fact that we did not look good versus LSU.
Doesn't
we
matter.
Probably had one of our worst offensive performances.
And yet you still won by 11. So like, that's what I'm saying. Like, Bama can play a kind of bad game.
Instead. LSU, dude, their offense is just terrible. I mean, Womack's defense gets the most timely stops and interceptions and fumble recoveries you've ever seen.
Always. Plot armor.
But hopefully we shake some of those cobwebs up, because that was not good versus LSU. Okay. 2:30. I wanted to bring this up because it's my lock of the week.
Oh my, folks.
We had 8-2, number 14, Virginia, at 5-4, Duke. We've discussed this already. Duke is only one loss in the ACC and very much alive for the ACC championship game appearance. A lock of the week is Duke wins this game.
They're favored, which is insane.
They're favored? I didn't even know that. I'm still counting this as my lock of the week. I mean, come on, they're 5-4.
That is the fact that, yeah, Duke 5-4 like is in this position. I kind of believe it, dude. If for no other reason, I think the ACC is historically weak this year. Anyone can win it. Why not Duke?
I think a big reason is going to be their quarterback. Very quietly having an amazing season. 24 touchdowns to 4 interceptions, 2,800 total yards. That is...
How did they lose four games?
That's keeping up with the Heisman contenders, like, legitimately.
I guess they had a couple of close losses, but they lost at UConn. They lost at UConn. Like, what is going on, dude?
And Tulane, they lost. UConn, yeah. Tulane.
They got destroyed by Illinois. Oh, my God, dude.
That's okay. I mean, if you win your conference game, I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
NC State, 5-4 at 7-2 Miami. Do you have any thoughts on this? Is Miami
I think that now that Miami's kind of done, I think they win. Like, now that it's been exposed that Miami's not good. Like, they won last week against Syracuse 38-10. I think it's going to be a similar thing where, like, they're gonna win these games, but it's not going to be enough. They're going to be on the outside looking in when it comes time for the selection committee to make the playoff picks.
100% agree. We have 6-3, number 20, Iowa, at 7-2, number 19, USC. Any thoughts on this?
I want to believe, but this is at USC. And, this is kind of a fun matchup. Like, this is, like, as elitist West Coast as you can get versus as, like, dumb farmer-brained Midwest you can get. And I hate to say it, but, like, let's face it, like, the West Coast always wins, like, these types of, like, aura type and, you know, matchups. Like, this transcends sports, if we're being real.
I understand that. They do. USC does have at Oregon the very next week, so they could be looking ahead.
Oh, maybe. But USC, like, is in a position where if they win out, they're potentially in the playoffs. Like, I think they'll be motivated to not just win, but, like, play well. You know what I mean?
Right. We have at 6:00, 3-6 Florida at 9-1 Ole Miss. Do you think Florida has any chance?
If it was at home in the swamp, maybe, but nah, this one's at Oxford. I think Lane and company take care of business here.
I think Florida's pretty much done. I think they bank the rest of their season's hope, not even season hopes, but like pride on the Georgia game.
Yeah.
And they're just done with the season. Maybe they'll show up for Florida State, but yeah.
Probably that game, but not Ole Miss. There's no like bad blood there or something. So.
Right. I mean, you never know. They could have something to prove wanting to try to get Lane.
At this point, I don't think Lane's going there, man. I don't know.
I agree with you. The final game I wanted to bring up was 6:30. 7-2, one loss in conference, number 11, Texas, at 8-1, 6-1 in conference, number 5, Georgia.
What's tough about this game, Randy, and I want to know if you feel the same, because obviously, like, I'm an SEC hater, you're an SEC homer. Does this game to you, like, not feel like it has any of the weight it should? Number 5, Georgia, plays number 11, Texas. It feels like both of these teams, in my mind, are fraudulent. Am I hating too much?
I get where you're coming from, but I don't think that Georgia is fraudulent per se. I think everybody knows what Georgia is, like top 5 maybe team that doesn't have necessarily the ability to really get it done in the playoffs.
Yeah,
but they're gonna take care of business in these types of games. I think it helps that it's at home for Georgia
at night. Yeah.
I could see Georgia eking out a close win, but it's like, it's crazy how much weight this game is not getting, how much talk it's not getting.
Game day didn't
even. This very much could determine an SEC championship game spot. Like, Texas is in full control of their own destiny, but it's like, can they really?
Is
their quarterback situation, is Arch looking any better?
No, with both these teams, it's like, it's curious, man. Like, I think the three SEC teams that are legit are Bama, Ole Miss, and A&M. And, like, those are teams I'm actually kind of interested in seeing how they perform. But at this point, like, both these schools do, Texas and Georgia. It's just they've proven over the last couple of years they can't actually get it done when it matters. We saw it last year in the playoffs. And I don't know. I'd love to be proven wrong, you know, especially out of Arch. We've been Arch haters all year, as has the country. Like, if he can shock us and beat Georgia on the road, good for him. But, like, I don't see him doing it, man.
I wanted to point out, in Arch's last two games versus Vanderbilt, he went 25 of 33 for three touchdowns and 328 yards. That's actually a really good stat line.
Arch, maybe he's finally figuring it out, you think?
Maybe. And versus Mississippi State, granted it is Mississippi State, 29 of 46, three touchdowns, one interception, 350 yards. That's a good stat line,
I guess. Yeah, technically,
and he had to play hero ball in that game. It was crazy.
That's the thing. Their last three wins, Kentucky 16-13, Mississippi State 45-38, Vanderbilt 34-31. Like, they are barely surviving these games, dude. And these aren't, like, great. Like, Vandy's good, but these aren't, like, elite SEC teams they're beating, so.
They did beat Oklahoma pretty handily.
Yeah, well, you'll beat them too pretty handily this weekend. So anyone can do it, man. Anyone can do it.
Yeah, I think Georgia's going to win. You know, it's just.
It's all goes.
It's Kirby Smart. He's not going to lose this game. He's going to end up in the SEC championship somehow.
Mm-hmm. He'll lose to you. Probably like a big. It'll be a big pick six.
Imagine if we had the chance to beat Georgia three times in one season.
This might be the year, dude.
Forget I said that out loud.
No, it's too late. It's recorded. It's official.
It is recorded. Okay, well.
All right.
Going through my head as a Bama fan.
Yeah. Any other games, Randy, to cap off this weekend? I guess we should discuss real quick. Game day. Number 10, Notre Dame, is heading to Pitt. 7-2, 24-ranked Pitt. This is an interesting one that I think no one was really talking about at the start of the season. This is the first time I think we've mentioned this game all year, to be honest. Pitt, like, it's one of those weird ACC schools where, like, theoretically they could make the playoffs, but what do you make of this one, Randy? Do you think Pitt has any chance against the Notre Dame at home?
Maybe. I think they benched their quarterback, who was actually a Bama transfer, fairly early on in the season, and then their offense all of a sudden looked amazing. I mean, Pitt's good.
They're good, yeah. I
don't think – I think Notre Dame's going to come out with this. Notre Dame is peaking late in the season, as they tend to do.
Notre Dame, we got to give a quick shout-out. We have to give a shout-out to Jeremiah Love. I think Jeremiah Love, their running back, probably the best running back in the country this year. He's about to crack 1,000 yards in this game. He's currently at 988, averaging 6.4 yards a carry, 13 touchdowns in the season. If you just, like, watch his highlight reel, dude, he's an absolute beast. I think he's going to be having an NFL career ahead of him. So, to me, that's a player to look for in this game.
There actually is one game I did forget to mention. It is South Florida at Navy. Both teams are 7-2 with one conference loss. It's at 11 a.m. It could very much determine who's going to play for the American. But, again, I don't know how much that's going to matter if James Madison is able to snipe the spot. But it could matter. But it might not, but it could.
I think South Florida wins this one. Not to disrespect the troops like Notre Dame, but I watched Notre Dame play Navy last weekend, and it was absolute shellacking, 49-10. The score is just as bad as it looks. I think Navy, they've lost their last two games. I think the steam has run out of the ship for the Navy, if you know what I'm saying.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I think South Florida wins this one handily.
All right. Ed, just scrolling down. I want to make sure I'm not missing anything.
Scrolling, folks.
That's really about all that I see, unless you see anything.
No, I think we're good. Well, Randy, thank you for your time. Dear listeners, thank you for your time, and thank you for the questions, folks. I had a fun time answering them. We really should do that more often, I think, the mailbag. It's kind of a fun, interactive way to get the community involved. Randy, this has been fun recording with you. Folks, as always, thank you for listening to Jim Podcast. And as always, folks, high tide.
Forward, Wisconsin.